Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton. Welcome y'all back to another episode of Bloody Angola. And we appreciate you listening and liking, subscribing, and all that good stuff.
Yes.
We want to thank our Patreon members who are very instrumental in the show. Y'all stay tuned at the end of the show, and we're going to talk about that some more. But Jim, today we got something. We always said it'd be different, right? And today, yeah, this is a very, very interesting story, which I do have a lot of personal connection with. But
I think we can title this one The Black Rhino.
The Black Rhino, absolutely. Yeah. And I knew the Black Rhino when he was becoming the Black Rhino. This guy's name is Clifford Etienne, and that's y'all, for you not from South Louisiana, it's E-T-I-E-N-N-E. Clifford Etienne grew up in New Iberia, Louisiana, home of Tabasco. We call it affectionately the Berry. If you're from South Louisiana, they just call it the Berry. I got a fraternity of brothers from down there, and Bobby Baudin, if you listen, and shout out, and probation parole, state of Louisiana.
But there's not much out there either. No, it's the Tabasco plant, right? If you're going to New Iberia,
It's grown up a lot over the years. But back then, and specifically in this time frame that I'm going to be talking about, Clifford Etienne was coming up, and he was truly basically a stud.
Yeah, Yeah, he dominated in wrestling. He played baseball.
Linebacker in football.
Track and field. He threw the disc in the shot.
6 foot two, 290 pounds.
Big boy. And was recruited by LSU, Nebraska, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, which these days are dominant, but back in those days were extremely dominant.
And recruited as a linebacker.
Yep.
And he just was a stud. But, you know, sometimes life happens and people try cocaine or different things and they hang with the wrong crowd. And that's what Clifford started to do. And he could have had the world as his oyster, and he would in later years. And seems like history repeats itself, unfortunately. But back then, on a certain day in Lafayette, Louisiana, when Clifford was a young man.
Yeah, he was 18. As most 18-year-olds do, he, you know, was getting away with what he could.
Right.
And him and four friends decided it would be a good idea to rob some customers at a shopping mall in Lafayette.
Yeah, it was the only shopping mall in Lafayette at the time. and that was in 1988, right?
Right.
And so I was there in 1989. And when USL was USL, now it's ULL. Go Cajuns!
Yes,
but they robbed some people, and ultimately he got busted.
Yeah, he got sentenced to 40 years, and he first stint was Bloody Angola. That was where he first went.
And in 40 years, y'all, would have been the minimum on armed robbery. It carries up to 99 years in the state of Louisiana. So he was like 18.
He was.
Yeah, he's 18 years old. He gets sentenced, and they ship him to Bloody Angola.
That's right. And eventually, after a few transfers, he ends up at DCI.
That's Dixon Correctional Institute, y'all. And that's where I would come to know him. What happened was I was working the work and sell block, which I've heard me talk about before. It's different than admin seg because there's two men to sell. But work and sell block is where you only get sent for major rule violations and basically for street charges. Whether you're smuggling dope, you attack an officer, you rape somebody, or you fight with weapons. Now, I had two tiers of the work and sell block that I ran, and I can remember distinctly Clifford Etienne was in the cell with a guy from Livingston Parish, a white guy from Livingston Parish. Now, Clifford Etienne is a black man, and they were in the next to the last cell at the end of the tier. And the tier only had cells on one side, y'all, face the screen windows. They had a couple black and white TVs down the tier. But I would stop and talk to them all the time because the guy from the LP, I knew him from the street. And I knew him back from the club days when you knew some of the same people. And, you know, you're not supposed to become friends and stuff with the convicts, which – I submit to you that when you are working 12-hour shifts in two on, two off, three on, two off, two on, three off, but even on my days off, the Department of Corrections was always short, and they had a on-call list, and basically, you know, I could work 30 days a month, but I'm doing time just like they're doing time. I was doing time just like they were doing time. So when you – they lock those doors behind you on that 12-hour shift. You know, you can only shower them and feed them and have nurse call so much, and shit gets a little boring. And so, you know, I would stop and I did a couple of years back there. And I say I did like a convict, but it really was like doing time. Did a couple of years back there. And when you get locked up on the work and cell block, once you get locked up, you have to do 90 days without a low court or a high court write-up, and then you go back before the board, and they basically hear your case as to whether or not you can be released in general population. Well, the problem with that is, y'all, I mean, the work and cell block is basically the worst of the worst because these are people that can't even follow the basic rules in prison, even the small rules, and the ones that, like I said, were back there for serious charges. Now, the white guy in the cell was back there for having or suspicion of having sex with a female guard. That's a no-no. But, I mean, it is what it is, right? If you can get over and do what you do, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Now, his cellie was Clifford Etienne. And so I began to talk to him. Now, look, this is a massive dude. Now, I was 6'2", probably 250 at the time, and he's 6'2", 300 pounds. But he was all muscle. I mean, like, solid as a rock. But he was a really cool dude, and I say that. I mean, I know he robbed people and shit like that, but, I mean, he could have been an asshole to me or anything else, but I would hang out and stand in front of the cell, you know, late at night and shit. But, well, I'm entertainment for them also. And we were talking, and I found out that Etienne was a boxer, and he was actually on DCI's boxing team. But also found out that he was an accomplished artist. And he's asked me when we were talking one night, he said, you know, you married, you dating someone. I said, I'm dating someone. He said, can you give me a picture of her? I'm like, bro, I'm not bringing you a picture of my girlfriend. You know? He said, no. He said, I'm an artist. I'm gonna draw a picture and you can give it to her. I'm like, all right. So the next time I came back to work, I got a little snapshot, and I gave it to him. And the next evening I came back to work, and he had hand sketched an exact likeness of this girl. And I can't remember her last name. I think her first name was Dodie. It was just fucking piece of artwork, and I was blown away. It's on a basic piece of paper done in pencil. I'm like, bro, you got talent, right? So I didn't know that, what I would come to find out later on and what we're going to talk about. But also, you know, I talked to him about boxing, and because I like boxing, I like to box, and both my grandfathers went to college for boxing, one at USL and one for LSU, and they boxed on the college boxing teams. And so I asked him, I said, you know, are you getting in a fight? Just want that bullshit. And I said, if you're going to hit somebody, and, you know, he said, Woody, if you're going to hit somebody, I want you to hit them as hard as you can in the stomach. Don't let them know it's coming. You rear back, full body swing, hit them in the stomach. And I said, why is that? He said, because if you do it right, you're going to knock the air out of them. He said, then they're defenseless. He said, you can just beat them to a pulp.
Yeah.
But he would go on to become the inner prison boxing champion for the state of Louisiana. And each prison has their own boxing team, and it's big shit.
Yeah. And I'll tell you about, I'm going to tell you a little bit about his reputation in prison and a little bit about a trainer that had actually started working with him in prison. So there was a guy named Vlarice Cooper. Yeah. And Vlarice Cooper had a nickname. It was Whoop. And they called him Whoop because of boxing. Right. Whoop, whoop, whoop. That's how he would say when you punch, it was a whoop. Yeah. So everybody knew Whoop in the prison system. He was a steward of the Louisiana prison boxing scene. He was an inmate himself. And Whoop, he didn't have the pleasure of meeting Etienne until after the boxer. He was already the most dominant prison fighter in Louisiana. So as Woody said, these different prisons have their own boxing teams. Angola has one. DCI has one. There's one in North Louisiana.
Hunts
has one. So this is a big deal in prison. These boxing teams, and Whoop was the guy who kind of managed that even as an inmate.
It basically helped him, Etienne, perfect his craft better.
Absolutely. Yeah. He had heard about this guy, this 6'2", 290-pound fighter, and he started working with Etienne. And, you know, from the first second he saw him, he could tell from his movement he had a ton of natural talent. He countered right. He stepped back right. He circled correctly. And as a matter of fact, Whoop would describe him as a prison version of Muhammad Ali, y'all. That's how good he was. Anybody describes you as Muhammad Ali, you're good. The prison version of Muhammad Ali from a guy who really knew that sport was amazing. So Etienne continued to dominate in the prison world. He actually won 30 bouts, never lost. So,
y'all, real quick, the certainly they would practice amongst themselves at Dixon Correctional Institute, et cetera. But the
shadow box.
Right. You're locked in a cell. You got a lot of time to shadow box.
That's right.
But when these bouts we're talking about, they would actually go to other prisons, or sometimes they would host it there, and they would fight against other prisoners in the state. And at the end of the year, whoever had the most wins got the banner.
That's right. And these were big deals.
Right.
As a matter of fact,
huge.
Family of these prisoners would go to the boxing matches, and they would have to buy tickets. Right. It was $5 for adults, $3 for children back then.
Yep.
And you would watch as if you were watching a sanctioned event on HBO.
And even though they wore headgear, the bouts were 3 minute rounds. But I would bet you, like, people love to go see the rodeo because it makes them care about getting hurt and laying up in an infirmary in the air conditioner rather than a cell block. I bet you these guys got in there. I wish I would have got to see one and just try to absolutely annihilate.
I'm sure there was a lot of first round knockouts. Headgear. Yeah.
Headgear really doesn't mean shit. Yeah, no. It's not like you're wearing an NFL helmet. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and these are some of these people lifers, y'all. I mean, look, they're in there and they're swinging, and you've heard on Real Life Real Crime what he described like prison muscle.
Right.
It's a totally different type of muscle, and all these guys had it. And he fought in the heavyweight and the super heavyweight divisions, so he was fighting the baddest of the bad, the biggest of the big,
and beating them.
Just never losing, 30 bouts inside. And that gets around. So outside of the prison system, Don King and all these guys are hearing about this Clifford Etienne and how he is the toughest man in prison and winning all these bouts. And after his 10th year in prison, he gets paroled.
Right, which is – basically, y'all, I would tell you that that's because of the outside influences from these promoters. And they were like, this guy can be heavyweight champion of the world. So they go in for the parole board. Look, we got contracts. We're going to train him. We're going to keep him on the straight and narrow. He can be on parole if need be, but we need permission, to get his boxing license and everything else.
Well, and let me tell you how promoters think. So, number one, you've got a extremely talented individual to start with. Right. He's getting paroled from prison. Here's your chance. And I don't know this as fact, but I would imagine his success helped with his parole, because in a parole board's mind, this guy can probably actually rehabilitate and change his life, because he's going to have unique opportunities not everybody is going to have when they're released from prison.
Right. Hey, let me.
He was well known.
Let me digress for a second. The reason he was on the working cell block, he got in a fight with a guard. With a correctional officer
named Woody Everett.
No, it wasn't me. I wouldn't have fought that day. No, but so he got in a fight with a correctional officer. Now, that when they went to the board here, and I remember him telling me this, that he had already been on the boxing team, and so the board considered his hands deadly weapons. So they charged him with fighting with deadly weapons on a correction officer.
And
so that's why he got sent to the hole for that. Now, he did his 90 days, maybe a little bit longer, maybe he went twice, I don't remember, but he got out while I was still there. He was good. He was locked on the block. He was good. He was never any problems. He was actually a pretty cool dude.
Yeah.
He got out. But you know why he got out too? He wanted to box again.
Yeah.
He was like, fuck that. I'm going to behave. I know my future's in boxing.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yeah, he was just the shit, y'all, in the Louisiana prison system, and really the national. He was well known in prisons all over the country, right, as probably the best boxer to ever come out of prison.
Right.
You know, and you're talking about, look, Sonny Liston came out of prison.
That's right.
And he was getting a lot of comparisons to Sonny Liston. So these promoters, they're not only salivating at the chance to get a hold to a guy who has an extreme amount of talent. He also had a hell of a story. That's right. And they love that. And he had a nickname in prison, which was the Black Rhino. Come on, y'all. If that don't scare you before you fight the 6'2", 290-pound boxer, right, I don't know what does.
And basically, he got that because the most dangerous animal in the world, the Black Rhinoceros or the Black Rhino, was a name that he embraced. And like Jim said, these promoters, holy shit, now you got the Black Rhino prison coming out of prison. That's what sell tickets regardless.
It is a, you can't spin a better story, right, with all of this. So he gets out and he turns pro in 1998.
So that was 5 years after I left him, or after last time I saw him.
And so how does he do? Well, his first four opponents, he knocked them out, right? And as a matter of fact, three of those first four was inside of the first round.
Right. I mean, he's cold-cocking
people. And Ring Magazine actually named him, believe it or not, y'all, he was later named the most exciting heavyweight fighter of the 2000s.
That's true. And
how about that?
He absolutely was destroying people. You know, I remember late 80s, early 90s when Tyson was coming up, and this, when pay-per-view had first come out, and we'd all put up $20 and get a keg of beer, and like he knocked out Spinks in like, you know, 30 seconds or whatever it was. Black Rhino was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And there's no, these, you know, a lot of the times when the big guys fight, they'll get tired and they'll hug on each other and stuff. The Black Rhino didn't have time to get tired. He was annihilating people like Tyson did when he was young.
Yes. And loving it. And what's he doing? He's living his best life, y'all. He's making tons of money. He's knocking people out for a living. Everybody's courting him. And he does what, sadly, a lot of, seems like it's not just athletes, but it seems like they struggle with this because there's so much of an influx of money under such a short period of time.
And fame.
And fame and all of that, that he starts dabbling in cocaine.
Right. Line here, line there.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me a little bit of that sugar, whatever he'd tell.
Yeah. In the beginning, you think you can handle it. It makes you feel even better, and you're on, already on top of the world. Remember, you came from a working cell block.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, first of all, you got out in 10 years instead of 40. You come from a working cell block. You build yourself up through the prison boxing system, and now you're building yourself up as one of the top heavyweights in the world.
That's right. And he continues on. He continues knocking people out, and eventually he scoops up the IBA Continental Heavyweight title. And he actually won that title in Baton Rouge.
It was at the Belle of Baton Rouge in the atrium, and I didn't get to go for whatever reason, but I remember when it was happening, and the white guy from the cell reached out to me and said, I can get you tickets. You know, do you want to come see him? And I couldn't go for whatever reason. But, yep, he won that there. And even though that's not like the biggest championship in the world, it's still a championship belt.
So that's right. And continues on. Eventually, he suffers his first loss. That was in March of 2001. And, y'all, it was a beating. He actually got floored seven times in that bout.
Knocked down seven times. And on the eighth, I think the referee finally stopped it. But it said it was just basically like a bloodbath. 100%. The Black Rhino never gave up.
No.
You knock me down two times, I'm probably going to stay down.
Yeah.
Seven times. I mean, but he kept getting up and fighting back.
That's it.
And finally, the ref's like, number eight, I got to stop this shit. Then he's going to kill him.
Yeah, he went out on his shield and never quit. And after that bout, you know, you may start to think, well, that was it. Well, no.
Nope.
ETN couldn't be stopped. He ended up fighting six more bouts after his loss and knocked everybody out.
Right.
And he was again, the talk of the boxing scene. And when you become that much of the talk of the boxing scene, eventually you're going to run into somebody you got to fight.
But so when he was talking the boxing scene, he basically, besides being the Black Rhino, he was always compared to young Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Yeah. So they actually knew each other before the opportunity showed its face and always got along. You know, Tyson, if you're a Tyson fan, you would know that he grew up very rough.
Right.
He was very similar to ETN, except for Cus D'Amato discovered Tyson before he had gotten so far out of hand that his whole life would have been spent in prison.
Right.
So much younger when Tyson got discovered at 12 years old by Cus D'Amato. But right. ETN and Tyson had a respect for each other because they both came from the streets. They were both super tough, both amazing boxers. And in 2003,
Memphis, Tennessee.
That's it. Tyson come a-calling.
Tyson came calling, and that was the first fight. If y'all remember this, that was the first fight that Tyson had the tribal tattoos on his face.
Yes. Yeah. So if Tyson wasn't scary enough, he comes out, and look, ETN, I'm sure, was intimidated. Right. Just like Tyson can intimidate anybody. I don't care how tough you are.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, and except for Holyfield, maybe.
Yeah. Well, he bit his ear off.
Yeah, he did do that. So in 2003, Tyson, the pinnacle of boxing, in an ETN fight, and Tyson beats the shit out of ETN in 48 seconds.
Yeah, and now the same guy from the LP, I talked to him after that, and he told me that what happened is one of the first punches that Tyson landed hit the Black Rhino on his eardrum, and it busted his inner ear. So ETN's equilibrium was off, and he couldn't even defend himself.
Yeah. Could you imagine how hard Tyson hits to bust your freaking inner eardrum?
In one punch.
Oh,
and but
God.
He said, to ETN's credit, he tried to stand and do whatever. Shit, your room's spinning, and I mean – I can't even imagine that. So
yeah.
Tyson, he ain't going to quit punching.
Look, no, he ain't. No, he ain't. And I remember, I will never forget the interview, because I can distinctly picture myself when I watched that live.
Right.
I actually watched that fight live. And after the broadcast, Jim Gray, who was a famous interviewer in boxing, pulls Tyson. And he says, you know, what did you think of ETN and all that? And how did your training go? And Tyson says, I broke my back last week. And I'll never forget. I was like, what? It was bizarre, y'all. Yeah,
that's crazy.
But he supposedly broke his back in training.
You know that the reason they were fighting in Memphis, Tennessee.
Which was?
Tyson couldn't get license in Nevada or anywhere else because of the rape allegations and all that.
Yeah. So if you're getting a little upset about ETN because he lost and all that, don't cry for him too much.
Right. Like, he made $1 million.
Literally a million bucks in 48 seconds.
Right.
So
for 48 seconds, I think I can last for 48 seconds. He might have hit me in the back of the head, but I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. 48 seconds, I'm going to give you a show. For $1 million?
For $1 million. So
I'd fight Tyson today for $1 million.
I'm telling you. Yeah. ETN gets that $1 million, and he unfortunately does what a lot of people who get money that never had money do, and that is he blows it. He buys sports cars, jewelry, multiple houses, and he actually got into a couple of businesses that suffered. Yeah. He was in a busing company. It went nowhere. He opened a restaurant, or he actually started a restaurant that never opened, and he did the cardinal sin in any business, which is didn't pay his taxes.
Right.
Oh, no, I don't care who you are. Ask Al Capone about that.
Tax man cometh, right?
Tax man cometh. So he's spiraling downward.
Yeah. And he's not surrounded by the best people either. Nah. Taking advantage of him. And like I said, he never had so many cousins.
Okay. So he's going along in life, ETN, and he's making a lot of bad decisions. And at some point, he decides it is a good idea to go get some money as he was spending all of his.
Yeah.
So he figures, so he figures what better place to get money than a check cashing place, right?
Genius idea.
The only problem was he didn't have no checks.
He didn't have a checkbook.
He didn't have anything to cash.
I'll tell you what he did have. He had a pistol. And a cocaine habit.
And a bag of cocaine.
And he's high as fuck,
That's right. So ETN goes to a check cashing place in Baton Rouge with a gun, and he pulls the weapon, and he decides he's going to hold up this check cashing place. And he gets a little, I guess you could say a little pushback on that from the check cashing people. Right. And he takes a gun, and he shoots it in the air, and he says, I will kill you, bitch. Right. That's exactly what he said, because they have it on recording, because she was dialing 911 while this was going on.
She was an
African-American female. So eventually he gets in his hands $2,000 after he fires that thing in the air, and he hauls ass out of there.
Right. But unbeknownst to him, the silent alarm had been hit, and Baton Rouge PD was responding in force, and they met him in the parking lot.
They did, and they were there really fast for a specific reason, and that was that same day, sadly, an officer in Baton Rouge named Terry Melanson, who was serving a warrant with some other officers in Baton Rouge, was tragically killed.
Yeah, they were making an entry. We call it a high-risk warrant. It was a narcotics warrant, and they were making an entry in the door, and he was shot and killed. And rest in peace, brother. I was on the SWAT team at the time that that happened, and we went from serving high-risk warrants, narcotics. We used to do them every day, and without the SWAT team, calling out the SWAT because it took so long. The policy got changed after that. Any high risk entry warrant, you had to use the SWAT team.
Yeah.
So rest in peace, brother.
Yeah. So it was really just more bad timing for ETN as this was going on. They were able to easily get there. So
before they got there, he's trying to make an escape. Well, you know what? I think he's so poor at this time. He goes to rob a check cashing place with a piece of shit pistol, and he leaves, and he's trying to make his getaway, and he makes two attempts.
That's right. So an officer with the Baton Rouge City Police Department, who was in an Exxon station across the street from the cash store, received a report of an armed robbery in progress, comes over his radio, and the officer observed one of the check cashing employees actually outside of the business at this point, and he could tell she was panicking. So at this point, he goes across the street and he starts talking to her, and he says, did you report an armed robbery? And she says, yes. A bunch of police officers at this time are pulling up. It becomes pandemonium. And so ETN escapes into a little wooded area. And when he comes out of that wooded area, he sees a vehicle and he just jumps in the vehicle. I guess he thought he was going to hotwire it or whatever. He didn't realize when he jumped in, there were two children in the back of that vehicle. He goes to start it, realizes, oh shit, there's no keys. The lady ran into the beauty supply place and just left her kids in there while she was quickly grabbing shampoo or something. So he goes to steal that vehicle, realizes the keys aren't in it, and the cops are kind of on to him at this point. They're pursuing him through the woods, and he's panicking. He's in a bind and
still armed.
He immediately exits the vehicle and he has his weapon in his hand and he aims it at two police officers.
Right. Not only does he aim it,
he pulls the trigger.
And
the gun jams.
Click. So it's probably a piece of shit, high tech 9mm or whatever. I mean, I'm sure if it was an expensive weapon, he could have traded it for coke instead of trying to rob a cash store. But he pulled it and pulled it again.
He panics again, obviously, because at this point, y'all, ETN just tried to shoot two police officers. And if it wasn't for that gun jamming, he would have shot them, possibly killed them. So he panics. He runs to a gold Pontiac Grand Am. He opens the door and there's a driver in there. He puts the gun to the driver's head. He says, get out. The driver, he protests this. Why? Because his two young children are in the vehicle.
Kitty daycare around there. Right?
That's it. So ETN pulls him out of the car physically, throws him to the ground, jumps in the car and starts to drive away in reverse at a high rate of speed. Right. He just basically goes backwards. He gets about 60 feet. The vehicle hits a curb and it stalls, and officers approach the vehicle with the weapons drawn and they apprehend ETN.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
how do you think that apprehension went?
Yeah. I don't know, man. His weapons jammed and I'm sure it was what we call a felony stop. I'm sure ETN ended up getting some. The Black Rhino ended up getting some dirt in his face.
Oh, I can look. And then don't forget, they are already dealing with that day a police officer getting shot.
Oh, yeah.
Killed.
Absolutely. And you just tried to kill.
And you just tried more. To kill two more. Right. If I'm a police officer, you're getting a fist to the face.
Yeah, well, you definitely. I mean.
Swim would have punched him.
Yeah, Swim. Swim would have gave him some justice that was just us. But he might have sprung a leak too. But anyway, he gets arrested. Armed robbery, two counts of attempted first degree murder on police officers. So God or somebody was taking care of him, letting those officers letting that pistol jam.
He
gets prosecuted, y'all, by the East Baton Rouge DA's office, and the prosecutor was Prim Burns. Now, I don't think we've ever talked about her on Bloody Angola, but I know her. I've been in the courtroom with her. She is fire. All right. So they had their best prosecutor on it, Hiller Moore's the best prosecutor. The DA generally in bigger parishes is a political figurehead who oversees all the cases, but they have their top lieutenants or generals, whatever you want to call them, that handle the big cases. Prem Burns was the one.
And well known for right. the serial killing.
Yeah, yeah, for Derek Tolley, right. And the, but it, as well as every top case in East Baton Rouge. So she said that across 34 years and 100 plus felony cases, and even taking down meddling cartel members and serial killers, that she recalls looking at ETN and thinking, that dude's huge, right? And she says she remembers the day he was sentenced. He said something to her like, I'm so sorry. The drugs were just really bad for me. But Burns also remembered the 911 call and the words ETN barked out that were recorded on security footage, says, I'm going to kill you. And she remembers using that against him in her open remarks, and she remembers the jury convicting the boxer quickly and easily. The years later, the prosecutor picked apart ETN's process in the trial in the verdict, and he said he received insufficient representation, and she was like, dude, you could have Johnny Cochran, and you weren't getting off on this charge. And the jury, possibly in prejudice, she was like, your victims were black, you're black, you know, it's not a racial issue,
right?
So, but anyway, he got sentenced to forever this time, but he said, but for luck, he would have been on death row. Y'all, he got 160 years, and guess where he was going? Bloody
Angola. No doubt about it. And look, let's recap real quick. This is a guy that just a couple of years, as a matter of fact, a year before this, had just gotten $1 million and had fought arguably the most, I would say the second most popular boxer of all time outside of Muhammad Ali, which right. was Mike Tyson. Right. Definitely the most popular boxer in my era, by far. And now you just got sentenced to forever, as Woody aptly put it,
right.
the rest of your life, pretty much in Angola. And ETN actually in 2004, for whatever reason, applied for a pardon to Mike Foster, the then governor, which right. was denied, obviously. Right. I don't know if he thought his popularity might get him a pardon, but it wasn't working with Mike Foster.
I think he was also trying to say stuff about traumatic brain injury and CTE and all, right. all that other bullshit.
Right. And look, here's why I don't buy that at all. And I definitely think that brain injury from boxing or pro football, absolutely it affects your decision making and all those sorts of things. But you were doing this at 18. I mean, you were yeah. robbing people at 18.
Right. Well, and this lawyer said he's entitled to a new sentence, and because the CTE should be a major consideration. No, he says,
sorry.
It's not his fault. The science wasn't there ahead of time, so he can not do all this bullshit. So I'm not even going to touch on that anymore.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Now, one thing we haven't mentioned to you is a unique, and when I tell y'all this is a unique and an absolutely God-given talent, is his ability in the painting world.
Yeah,
art paintings.
Well, I told you about the drawing. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that he was a painter also, but he drew that picture of that girl for me.
Yeah, so if you're a patron member of any sort, we're gonna put this on Patreon, and it's just some examples of his artwork. It is unbelievable, yeah. y'all. God definitely touched him and gave him a talent with artwork. So we're going to put that up there. And look, Woody mentioned this earlier, and I want to read this to y'all. Woody had mentioned, hey, he was a nice guy, you know, and
yeah, it was cool.
Great personality, right? Cool dude. I'm going to read you a letter that he wrote to a fan, and this is in 2019. So this is fairly recent. Right. And I'm also going to put this up on Patreon. But a fan had just wrote him and asked him for an autograph, basically, a boxing fan. And he said, sorry I took so long getting back to you. just rediscovered the letter you sent me at the end of May. And I always take time writing anyone back since they took time to write me. All letters are screened for contraband, and because of some drug heads' attempts to smuggle contraband in here, the mailroom discarded the index card you sent me to sign. So I'm sending you this large piece of paper signed by me. To answer your questions, I am still healthy, and I look forward to a better future.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I will get out of here. And he says that in all caps. I paint and I cut hair almost every day. Number three, I'm not in a cell. I'm in a dormitory with a bit over 100 guys. And I do watch TV sometimes, mostly news and sports. I have a TV in the barbershop where I work. Number four, my whole boxing career was an interesting story. Started writing a book about it, but I haven't finished. Number five, fighting Mike Tyson was like fighting the other 30 fighters I fought. It was a job that took care of my family. I never got into all the hype. And I met Tyson years before they even talked about us fighting each other. And number six, the most fun I had in boxing ring was every time the referee raised my hand as the winner after all that hard training. You take care of yourself, and I wish you and yours all the best. Clifford Etienne.
Pretty cool.
So reading that letter, that don't sound like a guy that tried to kill two police officers, rob a check cashing place. So when Woody mentioned that, you know, he seemed like a cool, nice guy. That reading that letter, that sounds like a guy that is out of prison right now, right, is living his best life. Just doesn't sound like that type of character, does it?
But the cocaine shit does funny shit, even to the best of people, and will never take away the fact.
Nose gold.
Not only did he try to kill those two officers, but who knows what would have happened to those kids in the car, et cetera, had he not wrecked it. Installed it out. But you know, when he went back in the prison this time, y'all, it wasn't without incident. I mean, he had issues. He survived an attack, and he would start painting. Well, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
He would start painting, and the last I had heard of him before we talked about this was I was watching something on the rodeo in about Angola Radio, mm-hmm. and they had him selling his paintings, and they were street scenes in New Orleans.
Yep.
Now, you're not allowed to make money off your crimes, right? He's not painting or trying to kill two cops, but he's painting like murals, not murals, but like oil paintings. Shit would cost you $20,000 in a gallery, and it was fantastic. The one I saw was of a second line, and that's a funeral procession for those who aren't from Louisiana, where they play the music and the jazz band does it, and they go behind the coffin and all that. But he was very, very good at it.
Yeah.
And his paintings are hanging, you know, all across the world. People commission him to do paintings, et cetera. But, I mean, even when he was in the pain room one time, somebody tried to kill him.
Yeah.
So
bad, in fact, that he had to get transferred.
Right.
And I do want to mention on those paintings, a lot of people may be surprised to know that one of his paintings hangs in the New Orleans Police Department.
Right. I didn't
know that. Sure enough. Yeah. I found that somewhere.
Only Jim Chaffin.
I found Jim that Chaffin somewhere.
That shit up.
It's actually, and there's a picture online where the two New Orleans PD officers are posing in the police department, and his painting is hanging. And I guess to them, it's an example of convicts have talent too somewhere. And God touches us all, gives us all unique talents, and that was his. And it's just a shame, in addition to his boxing, which was also a unique talent. Yeah.
And I'm going to regress for a second. When I said he attacked a correctional officer with Fisk. I believe now, I'm thinking back on it, I think it was just another inmate. But instead of being charged with a regular fist fight, which wouldn't send you to work in cell block, they charged him for fighting with weapons because his hands were considered deadly weapons because he was such a renowned boxer.
I believe it.
But y'all, you know, he would go on after that attack. He talks about surviving COVID when they put them all in cells when everybody else in the world was trying to be separated. They were locking it down. He talks about that. But at some point after the attack, another inmate, a friend of his, told him, hey, man, basically, you got to get your shit together. I mean, he'd let himself go. He'd gain weight. He was dressing sloppily. And ETN listened to him. So he started dressing better. He shaved his head bald. He started to exercise every day at 5 a.m. And he said he stayed away from rats or dudes that would never amount to shit in their lives. And that friend asked him, said, what do you need to start painting again? And ETN told him, he said, 2 weeks later, the supplies arrived like magic. Canvas boards, paints, and brushes. And the friend told ETN, you're the Black Rhino, the man who went from prison to pinnacle boxing. And eventually, ETN returned to the Payton room. Hearing or no hearing, he had to move forward. Now, talking about his hearing, y'all, I told you his eardrum got busted
by Mike Tyson.
By Mike Tyson. And his equilibrium was still off and all that. But he to this day, paints. And Jim and I have been, you know, had several offers to attend the Angola Rodeo. And I said, that's the last fucking place you'll ever catch me on the face of this earth because all the people I've put up there. But if I ever do go, I'm going to go see the Black Rhino.
There you go.
And I guarantee you he remembers doing
that. We need to do that trip soon. Yeah. And that would make for a great, episode. And incidentally, we do want to welcome Woody back. Last week, I flew solo for you Patreon members.
I appreciate you doing that.
So we did a bonus episode. It's only up on Patreon. So if you're curious to hear about it, it was called Iron Mike.
Iron Mike.
And it's about a guy that could fight in prison for sure. Right. But it's just an absolutely crazy story of a guy who killed three inmates inside of Angola.
Yes.
And just some amazing stuff there. But Woody was on a special assignment, which in the future we'll be able to tell everybody about. And I also recorded another episode that I'll be dropping as a bonus episode. It's a Boss Bitches Part 2. But I'm glad to have Woody back now because I have to think of all that myself, brother.
I appreciate it. But tell me about Boss Bitches 2.
Yeah, so Boss Bitches 2. Of course, if you listen to the first one, we feature Martha Stewart, M. Diddy, for those, right. those and a bunch of other lady convicts. And this one, much of the same. It's for other lady convicts. And look, you join Patreon and you'll find out who they are. Right. How about that?
And so, y'all, go and check it out. We have numerous bonus episodes. And Jim, I appreciate you covering me while I'm gone.
Oh, no worries, man.
The bonus episodes are fire, and as all Bloody Angola, but the Patreon we have different tier levels now. Each go look it up, and Jim can it'll be in the show notes.
And I'm glad you mentioned it because I want to shout out. We're going to shout out. We've got over 130 members now. We're blessed to have that. They right. support us. We couldn't do this without right. them. So we're going to read out real quick each of our tie down and warden team members, give them a little bit of a shout out. And just to tell you really fast are what our teams include. So the warden team is our top tier. You get ad-free episodes, obviously, early access to these episodes. You get full transcripts of all the Bloody Angola Thursday regular drops. Any shows that we do that are live, you get automatic VIP access.
Right.
And you get a free piece of Bloody Angola merch every quarter, so four times a year. Right. We're sending you something, and I know I've sent out a bunch of merch lately to a bunch of people that are our warden team members. I appreciate y'all so much. If you're a warden team member and you hadn't got that first piece of merch, please just message me and we'll get it to you.
If you're a Patreon member on any level, and you know, and because it's a lot, y'all, but it's very important to us. If we've missed something, we're human beings. Please, please, please message us.
Yes.
We'll check into it.
Yes. And so that's our Warden team. We also have our Tie Down team, which they get ad-free episodes, early access, full transcripts of those Thursday drops. And they also get our Sallyport companion episodes, like the Boss Bitches, that we're going to drop as a bonus for them. So Woody is going to read our Tie Down teams, and I'm going to read our Warden teams today.
All right, and the Tie Down team gets you...
That gets you the ad-free episodes, the early access, the full transcripts, and the Sallyport companion episodes.
Carol Hagen, you are a love. We want to appreciate you for being a Tie Down team member. I hope you're enjoying your benefits, and we appreciate you so much, all right? And Kirsten Dahl. Now, Kirsten has been a lifer forever, and she used to send me pickles and all kinds of stuff, Jim.
There you go.
But thank you, Kirsten, for supporting Bloody Angola. Also, we really, really love and appreciate you. You're awesome. And Lisa Stevens, well, I know who you are, and thank you for being a Tie Down team member, and we love and appreciate you so much. And Tina Johnson. Tina, thank you for being a Tie Down team member. You rock, you kick ass, and we appreciate you. We couldn't do it without you. And Miss Julie Easterday, Julie, thank you so much for being a Tie Down team member. Enjoy those benefits, sweetie.
All right, and we also want to thank our Warden team members. Our Warden team is our top tier. You just can't get any more than what we give those Warden team members. They are our highest support. We love and we look, if you can't even be a patron member, we still love you and appreciate you.
Absolutely.
But we really, really appreciate the support of all our patron team, especially our Warden team members.
Yeah, and especially in these hard times when eggs are $9 a dozen and you take the time to subscribe, we're going to hook you up.
That's right. So, Melissa Jewell, thank you so much for being a Warden team member. Miss Christine Spence.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you so very much for being a Warden team member. And how about Miss Amber Morrow?
Miss Amber, thank you. We love you and appreciate you.
100%. Miss Lisa Marks.
Miss Lisa Marks, you, we don't even have a term for you. But we love you. You know we love you.
Double Warden team member.
Yeah.
She's just amazing. Right. Thank you so much. Love you. Mandy Oliver.
Mandy Oliver.
Miss Mandy.
Thank you so much. She's awesome.
Leah. Kafiria. Yes, Kafiria. Yeah.
A part-time researcher, full-time crime junkie.
And Hellraiser.
You don't want to mess with Leah. Leah, thank you so much.
That's right. So that's our Warden team, and we really appreciate the support of all of those members. We're going to be shouting out as many as we can every week here going forward. Thank you so much, and until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Overton.
Your host of Bloody
Angola.
A podcast, 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace! Bloody Angola is an Envision podcast production in partnership with Workhouse Connect. Music produced and composed by Alfie DeRuin in Studio 433 with vocals by Thomas Kane. Created and hosted by Jim Chapman and Woody Overton.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hillstring Gang, Rango the Three. I'm here for life. I'm here.
Goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.